Blog Talk Radio.
Convention to Zero Redemption by Stephen L. Bobo.
Everybody, Stephen Bubble here, Bozilla at the wheel. I want to thank you guys for tuning in for another show on the Kelp. We are about to have a gentleman on here, Mr. Aaron. If he's on here, please come in and introduce yourself to the public.
Yeah,
you with us, Aaron?
Aaron Temple.
Oh, good.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you great.
Yes, sir. So how's it going? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm the executive director of the Youth Justice Fund. We're a small nonprofit that works with youth who are sentenced to a term of adult imprisonment. So we've worked with people that went into the adult criminal justice system as young as the age of 14, sometimes up to the age of 18. Some of these youth have spent, you know, a few years in the Michigan Department of Corrections. Some of them have spent decades in the Michigan Department of Corrections and are commonly referred to as juvenile lifers. I'm also formerly incarcerated myself. As a juvenile, I was in and out of the criminal justice system. By the time I turned 18, I graduated to a penitentiary sentence of 19 years and spent almost half of that before I got paroled out for a violent confrontation with law enforcement. And another life that I live now, I'm finishing up my doctorate at the University of Michigan, and I'm faculty there teaching students in the criminology and criminal justice program.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. Myself, I was incarcerated also, plus I was also a former corrections officer. So I understand what you're saying, man. I do understand what you're saying. So I'm going back to school, too. I was a CO here in Ohio.
Okay.
And I say it's great to see guys like you, sir, to get out and finish doing what you're supposed to be doing, helping these juvenile, these kids, because who else can teach kids better about juvenile facilities, about people who have been in the penitentiary? Because a person who comes off the street trying to teach them, people come off the street and try to teach them, they're not gonna grasp to them. So that's one thing I've always been trying to tell people, that if you know somebody who has been locked up, that is a good mentor for a child, especially if he's trying to get his life together and he's doing good things and he's working and he's doing what he's supposed to do as a citizen. He's a good person to have. Talk to your children, man, woman, it doesn't matter, because we can tell people what to expect if they get locked up. Because it's not what you see on TV. It's Delcy Bell all the time.
Absolutely.
Not what you see on TV. Yeah. So tell me more about your your program you got going on, man. It's really interesting because, you know, with us, we're the pipeline, and we're trying to stop kids, trying to help stop kids before they even get to that point. But it's good to know that if you get to that point, there are people out there still able to help you. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, even, and that's like my vision for my nonprofit's future, is to kind of cut things off on the front end. So unfortunately, we're dealing with the back end now, where these youth went into the criminal justice system as kids, into the adult system, which, one, they never should have been put there to begin with. Like, why the hell would you put a teenage boy or girl with a bunch of hardened, you know, criminals that are adults? It makes no sense to me, but that's the way the system is designed. It's not broken. It's actually quite purposeful what we do, you know, as a society.
Yeah.
But, you know, so as I'm working with these men and women that come home, there's a lot of issues that they deal with. So, like, arrested development is a big one, trauma. Those are two big areas that we never really talk about, other than the basic, you know, necessities that they all need, which is housing, transportation, employment, educational access. But, like, I think the pivotal piece that's where it makes us different as a nonprofit is beyond the direct services that we provide, which we do help people, you know, get employed and find them a, you know, roof over their head and get, you know, stabilized. We work with, you know, the trauma that they've experienced, not just in the prison system, but also like as young men and women, you know, as they grew up in their neighborhoods. A lot of them are, you know, youth of color that went into the system. They came from communities that were just devastated by crime and redlining, you know, by the government, where they're creating all these really racist, discriminatory practices that kind of push poor people on the fringes of society. And it's just, it's horrific. You know, when you really look at the root of crime, you kind of see it's colorblind in a sense. It's just that the government has a way of very sneakily pushing communities of color, you know, on the fringes of society. So, of course, there's crime that happens in inner cities, you know. But when you really look at it and you look at white communities that are rural, when they are put in the same type of situations as a lot of communities of color inner cities, they revert to crime as well. So it's really, to me, it's like this, it's capitalism is the deepest root of all the evils where we're pushing people into the system. So we got to address that trauma, that childhood trauma, the trauma as teenagers, that trauma in the system. So we have a lot of programs where we work with individuals in trauma-informed practices. We have social workers, clinicians that kind of talk about, you know, things that we went through, and we try to resolve them, whether it be through art, whether it be through just group therapy, whether it be Zoom or in person, all these different things. A lot of our clients have just said that, you know, it's phenomenal because a lot of them come home, particularly men. For men that go into the system, you know, it's very different than the experience for women is that, you know, you have a very hyper masculine, aggressive, violent environment in prisons. And it's tough for men to kind of lose that macho mentality and that aggressiveness when they come out of the system. So we help them kind of work on that too and understand that, you know, like, look, as a man, you can cry. As a man, you can be emotional. You can show emotion. You know, you can be vulnerable with a significant other or to your community, and the importance of giving to your community and building community as opposed to taking from it when we were just kind of distraught youth.
That's right. That's right. That's the main thing that we try to teach. Danielle is the president of my foundation, and she brought up the things of art therapy, because she's in psychology.
Yeah.
I have another lady in our group, and she's in psychology also, and she has always said, sometimes kids do not want to talk because they're scared to talk. Maybe they could pay me out. And she's always told me that. And it was a long time I didn't understand that, but when she finally broke it down to me, she's absolutely right. Because, like she said, Danielle, if you're all here, chime in on that one. You know about that than I do.
Hey.
Danielle.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
About art therapy.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
I believe that art therapy gives a voice to those that either don't have a voice or are too traumatized to even use their voice. And doing prison time as a child is a prime breeding ground for that.
Absolutely.
I'm just a great big advocate of art in all forms, whether it be painting or poetry or sculpture. I've seen some very powerful sculptures come out, and like I said, it's a way of expressing. Like, you can put a whole lot of meaning to the color red, but if you have a limited vocabulary, because like you said, arrested development, if you have a limited vocabulary, you can't say things like, like huge words to express just angry when you are so much more than angry, when you are so much more than frustrated. But there are, you know, infinite shades of red that you can use to express that. So I believe that art gives voice to the voiceless and words to those that are still too ashamed to use the words.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Very eloquently spoken. I agree with you 100%. And I kind of see art as it's kind of a mechanism for us to kind of release the deepest parts of our soul, whether that's good or bad, too. We try to focus more, you know, for our trauma-informed programs to let out some of that darkness, some of our demons that we all have inside. And it just happens that people that have been justice involved, particularly with youth, they got a hell of a lot more because they've seen more, they've lacked more. You know, it's a beautiful way, like you said, like some of the pieces of art that I've seen, even though like someone may not be the best artist per se, but the story and the imagery that comes out tells a powerful story, and it's very cathartic, I think, for people to let some of that out.
Exactly. Sometimes people just need that catharsis.
Yeah.
Sometimes just the action itself is more therapeutic than talking. You know, to put big bold strokes and to pound on that clay.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I've
been quite happy with a nail gun. You know, I just
yeah. And it's a very, a kinesthetic form of learning too. So as an educator, you know, I realize that a lot of times, particularly with people that have arrested development that went in as youth, like they're very kinesthetic in their learning. They really will have a hands-on kind of still like children. They're in that mindset to an extent. So to give them clay or other art is a way for them to use their hands to pull that out. Like you said, maybe they can't express it in words, but they can express it with, you know, physical objects. One of the art workshops that we do over on the east side of Detroit, which is one of my favorites, we have this old cigar factory that we bought from the land bank in Detroit, this group called 555 Arts. And they're an awesome group of people that take a lot of blighted and scrap metal from around the city of Detroit. And they repurpose that metal in a little small foundry they have there. They melt down metal, and I'm able to take participants there, and we either take clay or these sand blocks and scratch images and then pour melted metal from the city of Detroit, take something that's kind of just laying there and is not really serving a purpose and is kind of causing, you know, some problems for folks living in the neighborhoods, and we take it and we make it into something beautiful. So we put all those bad feelings into that object, and now it has power. It's
exactly.
Really a beautiful thing.
Giving something beauty that would otherwise be considered ugly.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And we're cleaning up the city at the same time, doing a community service too. I think that's the other piece is that, you know, we need to think about civic engagement, you know, for this population and really any youth at all. I mean, I think as a society, we need to realize that, yes, the system is totally messed up. It's horrific, the things that we do to people. But, like, all of us have some complicity in that. And if we don't join together, you know, from all socioeconomic backgrounds, racial, religious, you name it, that's how we're going to really fight these corporate devils that are, like, running this country. Whether it's the left or the right, I think both political sides are screwing us in different ways because they're all bought by corporations, and none of them represent the people or the public. So we got to, like, repurpose the world as a collective.
Yes, and, you know, and that's one thing I try to make people understand, that I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm for who's going to do the job right. And my thing is, if we vote somebody in and he doesn't do the job, bite him out. Don't give him two terms, because you're making the country even worse. You know, especially, I know everybody votes, everybody, this man who's in office now, I'm not a big fan of his, never have been, but how long is it going to take the next president to get this country back to where it used to be? And then everybody's going to get mad when he doesn't do it quick. Everybody's going to go get mad at him because he's not doing it quick enough. This is not 2 term sentence. This is going to be his 2 terms and somebody else's 2 terms. It's going to take that long to get this out of where we're at. Mm-hmm. And especially with the place where, like Daniel said one time we were talking about, we have no relations with countries other than the United States with ourselves. And we don't even like ourselves half the time.
No, that's very true, Stephen. Very true.
And you know, and because you said, for people like you, sir, and that's one of the beautiful things I like, that you're taking people take for granted and throw away, and you change it for something that's going to be beautiful. And these kids can actually say, you know what, I made that. I did that. And sometimes that's all a child needs, to see what I can do and what I made to make everybody's whole complexion change. As, man, that man, he's not a hood. Look what he did. And sometimes that's all we want, is for somebody to be proud of them.
Yeah. And I think that's a big piece of our work as well, and that's something that's become my life passion as well, is, like, narrative changes. So, like you said, like, a lot of people in society see these men and women that come home, you know, we have those old terms like super predator and all this racist ideological perspectives about, you know, how kids commit crime and how they're horrific. And yeah, some of the youth that I've worked with have done some really horrific stuff. I mean, I almost shot a police officer at the age of 18. So that's pretty damn violent. I started a shootout. I mean, that's pretty wacko. I just, thankfully, no one was injured in my incident. But, like, you know, I wasn't a super predator. You know, and neither are any of these kids that are growing up. They grew up in really horrific, traumatic environments. They're home, like, they've seen things. Like, I've almost murdered as a child. I've seen my mother raped. I've seen things that no child should ever see. And all the people I work with, the story's exactly the same. So, like, we got to change that narrative of where they made this snapshot. Yes, they paid their debt to society. Yes, they made a mistake. And sometimes, you know, people I work with have killed someone. And that's not okay.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, how do we not move forward, you know, and let these people become a part of society and allow them the pathway to redemption, too?
Yeah, come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. That's what I'm talking about right there, man. Because, you know, you think about it. All these children who are in the penal system, they're going to get out. What are they going to be able to do? Because now they're going to be blackballed. A lot of places are not going to hire because you got a juvenile offender, you know. And not like you said, not all kids are Charles Manson. They're not them.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's not understood. And Daniel tell you, she told me this one time with the kid with the mental capacity of a child. And Daniel, if you're still on here, run that down because I remember you wrote it. I never wrote it down, but I know you know off the top of your head.
Yes, sir. Children, actually, children and young adults, they are not fully developed as far as that frontal cortex until ages of 25. Until
their mid-20s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And 25 thereabouts. Now, if you think about it, a child that has grown up and disadvantaged or not being exposed to things and not being allowed to grow or not being able to grow because they have they're either ED or special ed or, you know, they have emotional difficulties, mental illness, or, you know, 1 in 59 kids is now diagnosed autistic. So how many of those kids have been misdiagnosed and they've lived their whole life not knowing why they don't think, why they don't understand affect and empathy and things like that? So somebody's not going to understand what their actions do, and there's nobody, and all of a sudden somebody's just labeled them as bad. And as a kid, and like I worked in the school system, and you see the change between kindergarten and third grade. In kindergarten, it's like every kid's got a fresh slate. They jump off that bus like, hand me some crayons and let me loose. By third grade, they have gotten into that mindset that they'll never be smart enough. They're a bad kid. They've been punished more than once for goofy stuff that another kid has gotten away with, so they think they're bad, or kids that are in special ed already think that they're dumb, or that, you know, and so that mindset is messed up. So by the time you lock them up, you've just reinforced what society has told them. So when they do get out, what chance do they have to rise above what everybody expected of them?
You're preaching to the choir.
but you know what, man, that's so true, because I sit back and, like I said, no stories. I sit back and see the kids that I grew up with. I had a kid, a guy that grew up with me in ninth grade, and he was a thug in Dayton, Ohio. You know, he was bad news, but he was a good kid. He played football with me in junior high, and he was a real good kid. But he got into the wrong environment, selling drugs in ninth grade, eighth, 10th grade. And in about 11th grade, he was 11th, 12th grade, he got murdered. So sometimes we have to figure a way out. Especially the people like me and you, sir, just as people like us, we should be able to reach these kids like, look, this is the way you're headed. You don't want to do this. You don't want to be in the autopsy. You don't want your mother to come and identify the body. You don't want that. Your mother's already worried enough that you're out there in the street. Then now he's got to worry about you. Are you going to get killed? Are you getting raped? Are you getting molested? Even boys get raped and molested. You know, you got to think about that.
Yeah, that's something that people don't talk about either.
And these young men, kids don't understand that. They think it's what they see on TV, what they see on Empire, what they see on all these other nice, funny movies that we watch. But you know, we are ones who can picture, we can see the difference. That's a movie. That's TV. You know, and then they were about to relive it, and then they get caught up into the game, and then they trap. They can't get out. And then by that time, mommy and daddy says, you know what, I'm tired of dealing with you. And that's the wrong thing that us parents need to stop doing. We can't be tired of our kids. Even if they do mess up, we have to be there for them. We have to say, look, you messed up, so you have to pay the consequences, but I'm going to be here when you get out, and we're going to try to get you some help so we can fix it.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Stephen. I think about something my grandmother told me before she passed away when I was a little boy. She often would tell me that, you know, no matter what you do as a mistake, always remember that your mistakes are your greatest teachers and that it's okay to screw up sometimes. But here's the, you know, the trick is that, you know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, then that's wrong. But if you learn from that mistake and you grow from it, that's like the best teacher that you'll ever have. You know, I kind of think about that in my life, like some of the biggest mistakes I've done, but like it's made me the man I am today. It's given me the empathy that I have for these other individuals that have been through similar circumstances and the love I have for these kids, more than adults that I work with, which I care about too, but like it's these kids. They're the ones that break my heart when I see these kids going down the same pathway that I went down and the power that it has, like you're saying, like it calls kids, you know, to that. And sometimes the family or the home environment is not there to reinforce, you know, to like look out for these kids. So they get called into the streets and they become consumed by it. And it's just so deeply sad. And as a society, we're all responsible for that. That's on all of our shoulders in reality and mostly on the government. But I mean, to an extent, like you said, like we reelect or we elect certain people into office and we become kind of like, you know, happy with the status quo, whether you're on the left or the right. I mean, that's the biggest trick that the government's ever created is to create this polarization in government to say the left is bad, the right is bad. When, again, both are screwing you in different ways. You know, that's just the reality of it. Both are bought by corporations and both have the same agenda to oppress and marginalize anybody that's not a multimillionaire. And that's what they've been doing.
Back in, like I said, that like we said yesterday on my show, that 1%. You know, the rest of both of us are in the 4%. We're in the less the 1% is the one who runs this world, and we need to come together as a unit. All of us come together. Rich, poor, black, white, Chinese, it doesn't matter. We need to come together as a group and come together and let this that 1% know, hey, we're done playing. We're going to get ourselves together. We're going to make this world better than it already was. Because, of course, you guys got the money and got the technology, but there's also people who are on, in our group who have money and have the technology that can do the same thing. They just don't get the break.
Yeah,
you know, and
absolutely.
Our kids that are coming up, we don't know what kind of kid they're going to be. They could be, like I said last night, they could be the next. They could be the next president. They could be the next doctor to find a cure for this illness that's going around now. So we don't know. When you watch these kids clean because they messed up, you're wrong just like they are.
Yeah, you are. We got to invest in them, I think. That's our future. And that's the problem with corporate mentality is that everything is expendable. You know, we think, you know, we make something today, we're done with it tomorrow, it gets thrown away. We can't do that with people. We can't do that with our children. And that's they're inheriting a future that they're not going to want. Like my little girl, think like she'll be probably the first generation in my family for a while, layers that hasn't been incarcerated somehow. You know, and that's a crazy thought for me to think, like, you know, I'm creating an environment and a pathway and being the father that, you know, I never had to make sure my baby not only never gets incarcerated, but she becomes empowered and understands racial and religious, all these different diversity elements that make us stronger as a collective. Like you're saying, we got to come together and fight the 1%
group.
Capitalism. Like,
that 1%, man. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're
a lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. Bezos and the Waltons and all these other bastards that are just running our lives. Yeah.
And you're right. And a lot of people don't see that, you know, and they want to get behind religion and stuff like that. You know, and God is the most important thing in my life. But there's times where we have to understand that. First of all, you have to do this by yourself because God always says you take the first step, God's going to do the rest. So take the first step and make that change. Help these kids. Show them that you can do it. Make them feel that they're wanted. Make them feel that they love. It was what happened. And another thing I hate is the fathers who don't take care of their kids. Oh, my God. I went off on that last night, and that burns me up. And then they want to say when their kids are in trouble and see them on the news, and then they want to say, well, how did he get there? Well, where were you at?
Yeah.
Well, he wanted to play football.
Yeah, where
were
you at?
To play baseball. Yeah, where were you at? Where were you at to helping study from that science test? Where were you then?
That's a good point. Parental responsibility is a big part of this, too. Like, you know, family members, too, and not just parents, are just not as engaged as they used to be, I think. Like, we're losing that familial element and that support system.
Right.
It's just,
I agree with you.
We got to change the way we think about things.
Wow. This is kind of funny, guys. I'm going to switch to the football real quick. It's funny. A Buckeye and a Michigan guy were talking sensible. So you see that? So
mm-hmm.
You can't be done.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing. I was born a Buckeye, Stephen. So I was.
Okay.
I grew up in the projects of Toledo, Ohio, and we just we moved on over the border when I was a few years old. So I'm a Buckeye by birth and Wolverine by employment. Really, I'm not a big sports fan.
Oh yeah, I just say it because a lot of people. Oh, a lot of people make big things up about that. That's what I'm trying to say, people.
Yeah,
it's just a game.
I know.
He's a Michigan fan. I'm a Buckeye fan. If we can work together to save two kids, then we've done our job.
Yeah, hell yeah. And get them off to either of those schools,
right.
And to do the right thing and to play and get an education,
because
sports is
great,
but they need to get that education to really – not all of them are going off to the NFL. Hell, like very few of them are going to the NFL.
That's right.
But,
that's so true.
Kids
and,
on educational academic pathway.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I tell because one thing I want to tell these kids when I talk to them, it's okay to play football, it's okay to play basketball, it's okay to play baseball. But you know what I'd love to see these kids do? If they're going to play sports, play something else. Football is great, but try something else. Let's try golf. Let's try tennis.
Yeah.
Let's try something else. Be something else. But you know what? Most likely, like you said before, let's be that doctor. Let's be that lawyer. Let's be that lawyer that can change and help your people and bring them out the problems that they're having.
Absolutely.
Yes, then you need that.
And that's what I love, like some of the people I work with in Detroit. So like a lot of the formerly incarcerated youth I work with, particularly the juvenile lifers, they go back to the city of Detroit. A lot of them are like very civically engaged, and I've helped train them and get them in this mindset to where, they're helping out their communities now. It's a beautiful thing to watch them engage with youth. But like that's something, like I said, as I go forward, I want to build a project where we do that more in depth, to where these people that have done time in the system, like you're saying, we need to work with these youth and more of the projects that we do going forward, because they're our future and they will listen to people that have, gone through those experiences and that look like them too, in all honesty, let's be real. It's hard for sometimes people to not, understand things when someone looks different than you and they haven't experienced things that you have. They grew up in a different community. It's a lot harder, and there's a lot more greater impact from someone that grew up on the east side of Detroit to go back to that community and say, I was exactly where you were 25 years ago, and this is my story. It's not this scared straight BS stuff that sometimes we see on TV, but like just real talk with these kids is power, showing them and allowing them to speak too and giving them space. And, and love and
That's
respect, because so many times they're just silenced, like, no one cares. They need to be heard.
You're right. That's true. Daniel, what's our time look like? Again, short on time.
2 minutes, 10 seconds.
Okay. Well, man, take us one more time about your group and where they can find you at.
Yeah, so the Youth Justice Fund, we're a 501c3 nonprofit out of southeastern Michigan. You can find us on www.yjfund.org. You can find us on Facebook at the Youth Justice Fund, or you can look me up, Aaron Kinzel, on various social medias, and I'm constantly posting about justice reform initiatives, my work with the Youth Justice Fund, and just community development, empowerment, and, like, destroying capitalism is my greatest passion.
Come on. That's great, man. Like I said, man, I would love to have you back on, do another show where you and Danielle could talk about the art aspect of it. I would like to have y'all
talk more detail about that for sure.
That'd be awesome.
Okay, well, thank you for tuning in. That'd be great. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We're about to last few minutes, and I want to say thank you for tuning in to the Bozilla Show, and thank you, Aaron, for coming on. We will definitely have you on again. And I want to say, guys, please be careful out there. It's the weekend coming up. It's Friday night. Don't do nothing silly. Don't do nothing silly.
Thank you for
Make
another
sure you
full
guys
house.
Work. Right. Thank you for another full house, guys. Pretty soon, after tomorrow, I'm about to get more minutes. That way you'll be able to call in and ask questions. It's hard to do when we've got a minute. So I want to say thank you for coming in. Keep calling in, guys. It makes me feel like we're making a difference, that you guys want to hear what we got to say. Thank you once again. God bless all. And please wash your hands. Wash your hands and wear your mask and love each other. Bozilla out.
From a distance.
From a distance. Have a good